Wah. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Class is in session. Obviously, Johnny is saying, yeah, Tim, get my name right, damn it. It's only been 5-6 years.
I mean, it's midweek. I can understand a homeroom, especially a homeroom coming off of a holiday weekend. But come on, Tim, class is in session. You know, come to class prepared.
Well, you know what it was, though? It was during the, you know, as we were getting ready for the show and you got angry with me. I think it was because of my corn on the cob. A little kernel got caught there in my throat, so... You were right to tell me to stop eating my corn on the cob.
Yeah, well, guys trying to have corn on the cob while we're recording class in session. I mean, I wasn't a mean teacher, but there was some rationale behind, like, hey, if you got snacks, finish them before you get to class.
Or bring enough corn on the cob for everyone to share.
For everyone, yeah. Or is it, my God, Tim, that's so annoying that you're eating corn on the cob in your mic. You know, that's
I'm cool with
probably...
It.
Okay, it's pleasant sound.
Anyway, I mean, if we want to get into a,
I know, like, that's a tangent, what really got you going.
Yeah, as I do carry a bit of, what is it called, misophonia? You know, that like annoyance from the sound of chewing as you chew corn on the cob into the microphone and talk to us at the same time. I'm like, geez, Tim.
Oh, man, dude.
Come on, man.
Stop it. Come on. Well, hey.
Get your elbows off the table, Tim.
My elbows are off the table, and I am not going to share with you the best joke my mother-in-law wrote this weekend. That'll be bonus material maybe one day. But, Johnny, class is in session. I'm glad you brought this back up. And, in fact, though, you know, Jacob and I, on one of those days where you needed a little bit of a break, we covered, Jacob actually brought me this original story, and it was a study on AI and, you know, what has now become the brain damage story about AI. In other words, AI causes brain damage, whole bunch of stuff out there. You know, yeah, Jacob and I kind of tried to break the study down originally there. Your brain on ChatGPT. Never did it say that ChatGPT causes brain damage, but a great time to revisit, because another piece, and I think he's one of the better people to read, Ethan Mollick out of Penn, the Wharton Business School, has written a lot about AI, great book, Co-Intelligence, and his blog or Substack, One Useful Thing. And, you know, he hit us with, you know, that first new piece where, no... That's not what's happening. Johnny, since you brought this back up, I was going to say, you know what? I mean, what is it about brain damage that you want to talk about?
Well, Tim, I think it's sensationalized, and I think even the article is a bit hyperbolic in the sense of, like, I have seen some great discussions, and I think that the original research study, I believe the paper is called Is This Your Brain on ChatGPT, is cleverly titled, and it is actually, I think it's a pretty great research article, an exemplar of the kind of digging in to better understand the impacts. And it even concludes in that study saying, hey, you know, we need to do a lot more research, but here's, based on this study, you know, it's a rather small study, what students learned or kept a retained knowledge of over a short period of time after, you know, for listener who's not familiar with the study, you know, students were asked to write an essay. There's a control group and an experimental group. So a group of students were asked to write an essay on their own, right? Not using AI, or specifically, I shouldn't say AI, ChatGPT.
ChatGPT.
Right, which is a kind of popular form of AI. And another group was asked to just write the essays, you know, using ChatGPT. Like, here, let go full green light, use ChatGPT to turn in this essay. You know, and I'm really butchering this research study, but goes to show that, you know, give a little bit of time and they come back and ask the students to write essays on their own. The students who had originally wrote essays on their own did similar to what, you know, they didn't show any loss.
Right.
You know, and then the experimental group that used ChatGPT didn't write as good of essays as they did the first time when they wrote their ChatGPT. And so there's a lot of further questions to ask. I've been reading a lot of great discussions around, well, it's about how we use ChatGPT or AI. It's about the prompts. It's about the discussion. It's about the learning. And we have a lot, like decades and decades of learning science.
Right.
That shows us like when we're doing, when we're engaged and when we're thinking about writing, we probably are going to remember that, you know, kind of like for us, all those weightlifters out there, not Tim and me, but not these days, maybe back in the day, but, you know, muscle memory, like for athletes and for people who think about that, like the routine. If you think about and you go through writing, say, write an essay, maybe I'll just pull this out of like high school curriculum, write a 5-paragraph essay, right?
And so motivational.
And you learn and you write about that kind of stuff versus ask ChatGPT to write your 5-paragraph essay and it does it and it's done and it's over with in maybe 30 seconds. And you might even proofread it a little bit and be like, yeah, it sounds like that's a great essay. Let me tweak a little bit, turn it in. My professor said, go ahead, use this, you know, and not a shocker. Then when asked to write an essay without that, not having had practiced or learned that, you know, similar, I could say, Tim, now I'm not picking on anybody, but, you know, we're not mourning the math we've lost using calculators.
Right.
You know, so it's, again, about the tool. So the study has gained a lot of attention, I'd say, nationally and media, and there's all kinds of headlines. I hadn't seen the brain damage ones because I think that's a little bit hyperbolic. It's a little bit sensationalizing. Like, I don't think that the MIT study or most of the people talking about it are saying, hey, here's proof that AI causes brain damage. But what it does kind of point to, and I love this, remember, I love to promote scientific consensus. Mm-hmm. And what it does promote is it says, hey, scientists, especially brain scientists, you know, neuroscience out there, learning science folks, do these kinds of studies where we can learn a little bit about what thinking atrophy is, right? Like if you've had a broken arm and you can't use your arm for a period of time, you have muscle atrophy, right? You have like, you got to rebuild that. You got to go to physical training. And there are certain things we think about that AI is pretty rapidly changing those patterns for us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, remember, we had some really good conversations over the last year about this. Let's not fall into the, is AI good or is AI bad? That's not writing a free pass to just be like, let it do whatever. Let's see what happens. But let's pause and let's develop kind of protocols and uses for AI that help us be our best, right? With regards to thinking, like maybe it's good to think about some things like the kinds of prompts or the ways you use AI, especially if you're a teacher and you're maybe even a writing teacher. How are you utilizing these tools that students not only have at their disposal, but are frequently interacting with? And we said it on here, most careers involve the use of AI in some capacity right now and the use of technology in that way. So it's radically changing the kind of work we do. What's that do to our thinking? Because thinking is also important. And so I like these studies because they help us find that balance.
But Johnny, what you're saying right there, just that last part, thinking, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here, thinking. And again, pointing to the Substack piece that came out today from One Useful Thing, Ethan Mollick, against brain damage, really talking about thinking as opposed to brain damage. Because, you know, first of all, he starts off with, I increasingly find people asking me, does AI damage your brain? It's a revealing question, not because AI causes literal brain damage. It doesn't. But because the question itself shows how deeply we fear what AI might do to our ability to think. And, you know, what's good about this piece is he takes that initial MIT study and says, okay, what do we know about learning? What do we know about thinking? What have the other studies shown us about using AI? And what happens when you rely on AI too much versus what we're trying to point out, using AI as a tool to engage, enrich, or deepen your thinking? because AI can really create an opportunity to be lazy. And Johnny, your example was perfect at saying, you know what, as bad as the five paragraph essay always was as a bad teaching and learning example, the fact is that when we were forced to do it, we learned something, we thought about it, we figured out how to put paragraphs together, we remembered it. The idea now that you can essentially put to chat or Gemini or any of these, hey, I need a five-paragraph essay on penguins, boom, it does it for you, and then they hand it in. And so you've bypassed that learning and thinking time on the question, the problem, the issue that's there, where we know that to learn something, you've got to spend time with it. You've got to engage it. You've got to ask it questions. You've got to play with it. You've got to send different things forward for feedback and then change back and forth. So there's a dance. There's an interaction. And guess what? What we can see now, and again, this is hard to talk about research on ChatGPT and learning. We're talking about something that really hasn't been, put out there since, 2023, 2022, the launch. But really, it's 2023 when people started using it. And we're looking at different studies. And, in one way, it's kind of like, duh, it doesn't cause brain damage. But Ethan Mullick lays out pretty, I don't want to say harshly, but lays out the fact that the reality is that if you use it to bypass the learning process, your learning will suffer greatly. So,
yeah, Tim, you got me distracted too, because I'm still as a writing teacher, and I get it if you teach it as the only way, which probably some bad teachers do. But a five-paragraph essay, I'm still not sure what's wrong with the five-paragraph essay in terms of other than maybe like if you teach it as the only way, right? It's kind of important to have an introduction, some body to your work, and then a conclusion.
I'm a fan.
I can say, Jacob, your thoughts on this, because, again, Johnny and I might date some of this, but, learning, thinking, doing, does taking shortcuts kind of short circuit the learning opportunity or the deep thinking that you remember as a student? And the introduction of ChatGPT, Jacob, love to hear your reactions.
Yeah, Tim, I think it's a scary prospect for how young people are going to develop having access to ChatGPT. I think it continues a problem that has existed for some time, which is basically Google and Wikipedia access to somebody else's thoughts very quickly. The ability to go on to YouTube or whatever and, what does somebody else think about this before you even have a chance to really realize what you think about something? I think that's a problem. I think we've been pushing it down the road for a very long time. I think that the internet had the promise of everybody would have all the information in the world and that we could get rid of ignorance due to that. And that didn't turn out to be the case so much. It actually introduced people to a lot of information without either the tools personally to deal with what's true or not or otherwise.
Yeah. So there it is. Ethan Mullick, though, check it out. And Johnny, jump in here, react to what Jacob's talking about.
I agree with this. Again, remember, I'm the skeptic of AI, mostly around its, its blanket use. Like, hey, as a teacher, I actually empower students to use AI and in our assignments, especially our writing assignments, as a tool, by thinking through prompts, testing out different introductions, maybe thinking about, what are some parts missing? What are some counter views that might generate reading this essay that I've written? Utilizing the tools at our disposal, I think can be incredibly empowering, can help us get unstuck as writers, can keep ideas moving. And so I think it's an important tool to engage with. And I think a lot of young people realize that and want it to be part of their learning because they see the value in it. And I think good educators are also seeing the value in it. I think students, I mean, I'm thinking about when I was a student, if you give me a shortcut and it's not a meaningful assignment, well, I'm going to take the shortcut. I'm going to be like, hey, I've written a bunch of these essays and, you know, they give me a prompt. I said, it's okay to use ChatGPT. ChatGPT, give me an answer. Let me read that answer. And you know, it sounds good. I'll post it or I'll turn it in. I don't think I would reflect on that and say, hey, I did a lot of hard work or I did some really good learning there. I completed an assignment. And it brings me back around to like, and I'm not a big fan of like, oh, kids these days don't want to learn. I think they do, but you got to structure it. You got to have some boundaries and you got to have some, there I say it, some authority. And I'd say that without imposing or implying authoritarianism. I mean, some discipline that is not about making kids do things to complete assignments, but to engaging them. So again, I come back to that difference about what is the difference between engaging versus compliance. And I can use AI to make sure students are compliant, either saying like, don't use AI or use AI or use AI only in these ways. Or I can say, let's explore how AI may engage us. And if I come back around to writing, engage us in how we may be stronger or better writers or how we might put together a really good essay response. What are the parts of the essay that I need to include? Here's what I wrote. What am I missing? What might strengthen my paper a bit, right? So I think these are important ways that I would say fall under the category of engaging. And when we're engaged, we're thinking and we're learning. And what learning science has told us is when we're thinking and learning and as engaged learners, kind of sticks with us. And I think there's a good case for involving AI in engaged learning. And I think really good educators are doing that. I think the article that you all shared from what's his name again,
Tim? Ethan Mollick.
I keep wanting to say Elon Musk, but I'm like, I know. It's not. That's just my distraction because, you know, the whole like Elon
well,
Musk
I was
creating
gonna say,
a new party. And,
well, yeah, you're thinking about Elon because of your new membership in his new party.
Well, no, Tim, not my membership. But nonetheless, I digress and I say, like, I do think, even though I go heavy against a lot of the sort of blanket use or the religious cult-like following of AI will save us, it's changing everything, and it will do all the work for us mantra versus like, hey, this is a pretty powerful tool that complements engaged thinking, learning, you know, classrooms, all of that. I want to echo what the MIT study concludes with in saying, hey, we need to do more research to better understand. Because, you know, I like that we talk about all the time, is YouTube rotting kids' brains? Like kids these days call it brain rot, right? Like different things. And we grew up with it, Tim, remember? Kill your television.
Television, I was just thinking, right? So, you know, it's just like, oh, my God, kids are watching too much TV. And, you know, I look back on that, too, and it was just like, okay, but I was watching a lot of Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers when I was little and was watching too much of that bad for me. And now we kind of go, oh, it depends. You know, this is the thing, right? It depends. Well, there's a lot of context in
everything in moderation, Tim.
Well, I'm going to tell you, some things I say absolutely full abstinence, and that is, especially to really creepy, scary movies. Jacob, no offense, but the worst scary, creepy movie, Jacob's Ladder, I don't indulge in.
I mean, you bring this up regularly, Tim. So clearly, it's left an engaging experience that you're remembering. You don't have to ask AI, what movies should I stay away from? You have a learning experience that's lasting. It's in your brain. You know, and so I'm on the, I think, Tim, we're probably agreeing. We're in the similar spot. And sounds like Jacob's there, too. It's like, hey, let's not overuse something in a harmful way, but let's learn what it brings of value. Right. To our experiences, to our relationships, to our problem solving, to our skill sets, to our crafts, whatever it is you're passionate about, how you make that product even better with the tools that you have at your disposal.
As you say, you know, so, you are, you know, we as scholars, as academics, as smart people, as, you know, educated thinking people. I mean, what I really liked about Ethan Mullock putting this forward one time was that he wrote the book Co-Intelligence, and I would recommend that book. But simply, he kind of lays this out as saying, you know, artificial intelligence isn't intelligent. The intelligence comes from us humans, the users, and how we intelligently bring problems to this new tool, how we're creatively going to use this new tool. Johnny reminds me all the way back to, you know, one of our conversations, you know, with music and the drum machine.
With
right?
Martin. Yeah.
Martin Atkins, and going, hey, guess what? You know, the drum machine made really bad, mediocre drumming.
I mean, it does a pretty good job.
It does a pretty good job, but it, you know what? Guess what? When you bring a tool like that, the drum machine, or my favorite example, it was an interview with David Bowie when they said, you know, aren't you worried that the synthesizer is going to take over music? And he was like, I love the synthesizer, not because it makes perfect cello tones, but when you take the cello, when you take the piano, and then you mix that together with a lower frequency electric guitar, the sound that that creates is a sound we could never create before. And so he was using this tool to enhance the human work, the artistry. And I kind of say this, so when you, you know, jokingly put me in the church of AI, the denomination I want to belong to is the denomination that is digging deep into saying, how do creatives, how do people who are engaged in deep thinking problems, problems that matter, do we now have a new tool to help us get deeper, to broaden our thinking, to move in directions that we couldn't go in the past because it took a lot longer? And Johnny, your calculator example is another great example. Before the calculator, writing out the mathematics, the process, the instrumentation takes a long time. And, it, you know, how long did it take people to get to the heart of the problem they were using math for? Now, right, you dig in, it allows for us to kind of, and you may agree or not disagree with this, but like Ethan Mullock, to me, you offload some of the busy work now so that you have way more time and more power, more intelligence, more oomph, and not getting tired out by so much busy work. We can offload some busy work to whether it's a calculator or in this case AI, but more than just offloading busy work to AI, we can actually use it to make deeper sense of some things. And I'm just imagining what super intelligence might look like. Yes, so I'm in a denomination of the church for AI.
Well, because, Tim, I still, you know, my resistance against it is like, you know, we're running out of resources on the planet. And in order to do this and to continue towards this super intelligence, I'm curious where the water's coming from to cool, you know, the computers that are required for us to achieve that super intelligence. So just thinking ahead on the things, that's a lot of my little pushback on AI is like, hey, it's awfully sexy. But let's pause for a second and make sure that it's building capacity around the things we absolutely cannot afford to lose. And this is where I think it is different than the calculator and the drum machine and other things. I think it is far more powerful. And yeah. I keep championing this, even though I'm pretty hard on AI. I think it will go down in history as an invention that changes.
Yeah.
You know, community civilization, like we talk about or we learned about in school, the printing press.
Right.
You know, or the assembly line, right? These massive technological shifts and changes in the world and human civilization. And I certainly think it's one of those. And we're learning about it as we go. I applaud all these conversations because, hey, it's not good or bad. It's what we make of it and how we engage with it.
It's exactly right. And now for your moment of zen. In war, good guys always become bad guys.
Hey, thanks for being a good guy today and listening to today's class in session. And if you want to grab more Busted Pencils podcasts, we'll just head on over to Apple, Spotify, or you can always find us at civicmedia.com or on our website at bustedpencils.com. And don't forget to download more Busted Pencils content like today's show on Mondays for homerooms, on Wednesdays like today for class in session, and on Fridays for producer Jacob's choice. And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always tune in and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcasts on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the civic media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. And keep busting pencils.